Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David. This is a truck across the set of San Congress, and I'm not the truck, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is May the 31st, 2025. It is the sixth day of Sivan 2029. We're going to do our second service. This is two time degrees, number 28, Brother D.T. Harder. And the name of the sermon is The Spirit That Originated Evil and Its Manifestation Today. D.T. Harder, February 21st, 1948. It says, our church is found out of Isaiah chapter 2, verse 22. Isaiah 2, 22, cease ye from man, he dresses in his nostrils. For wherein is he to be accounted of? In this verse of the scripture, Yahweh recommends that we cease from man. And the reason given is that man's breath is in his nostrils, because without a breath, he is but a lump of the dirt, and therefore of no account. He is no God. For the plague would not have been made if the people were not putting their trust in the man rather than in the Lord for their salvation, that is, rather than doing what the noble Bereans did, studying to know whether these things be so for Yahweh's people are given. I need what others think or say. They are today doing what hundreds of the thousands were doing in the Asherah day, trusting in the opinions of the learned priests, scribes, and rabbis. For the Jews have given heed to hearsay instead of engaging in a personal investigation and experience of their own with the source of the truth, is therefore the very thing that crucified the Savior, Yahshua. And where do you suppose such confidence in man originated? We often think that evil originated with Eve when she reached for the forbidden fruit. Really, the fact is that the evil already existed before the Eve came into the contact with it. Let us read this from the prophet Isaiah. How art thou fallen from the heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nation? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of the Yahweh, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell and to the sides of the pit, 14:12-15. For we understand that the Satan's name before he sinned was Lucifer, and that he sinned before Eve sinned, that he was impersonated in the serpent that deceived Eve. We shall therefore consider the sin in heaven before we further consider sin on earth. Satan, we are told, was not the only sinner in heaven, for with him were cast out of the heaven a third of the angelic host, Revelation 12:4. These were cast out of the heaven because they gave heed unto the words of the Lucifer, unto a man in heaven, rather than giving heed unto the word of Yahweh. This was the angel's downfall. Lucifer himself fell when he aspired to be as Yahweh. These two sins, trust in man and desire to exalt self, are still as the leading sin elements. Alright, let's read that again. For these two sins, with the trust in the man and with the desire for the resulting of the self, and are still as the leading sin elements. Now, here on the earth, this was Eve's stumbling block, and to many, even today, it is still the stumbling block. No appetite alone was not the cause of the Eve's downfall. The serpent did not say, "Thou shouldest eat of this fruit, for it is wonderful, more delicious than any other fruit in the garden of the Yahweh." But he said, "Yahweh doth know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as the gods, knowing good and evil." Genesis 3:5. For the fruit appeared unto her, for she was tempted by the idea of the having of for the opportunity for the being exalted unto the throne of the Yahweh, for being exalted unto the same position for that of the Lucifer himself aspired, that the Lucifer himself aspired. For the Lucifer must have honestly believed that he would be as Yahweh if the angels in the heaven and the men on the earth would but take orders from him. And so we see that the devil deceived Eve on the same grounds that he deceived himself and his angels. That's the only difference, being that he caused Eve to eat of the fruit which he himself and his angels would not eat. Consequently, Eve sinned against her physical being too, by the taking into it something that was not created for the good, and consequently she died. But Satan and his angels still live, for this same stumbling block, the desire to resolve self, has predominated throughout the ages, and it predominates today. No, I am not making a rash and empty statement, for I have the facts for the backing up of my word. For example, in the days of the Exodus movement, there were the Korah, Dathan, and the Abiram, who aspired unto the office of the Moses and Aaron, as the Lucifer aspired unto the throne of the Yahweh. The highest offices they could have long. For, and did not Lucifer fall because of the warning to be above all others? For nothing more than to exalt self, and was not the same as true of the fall of the core, Dathan, and Abiram? For they received the same clamoring for the position, even in our own churches. For the offices of the church elders, Sabbath school, superintendents, secretaries, pianists, and other such church offices, let us remember, hold no monetary compensation, but in spite of it, every year in most of the Adventist churches, as far as I have been able to observe, there is a clamor and a quarrel by men and women for one or more of these offices, since there is no monetary remuneration for such services. Then what is the fuss about it, if not purely for the self-exaltation, if not for the purpose of it being looked up to as somebody? You see, then, that the same clamor for the self-promotion that existed with the Lucifer, with the five, with the others, down through the ages, exists today. My statement, you see, is backed up by the actual fact. Moreover, if such be the case with those who receive no monetary consideration for their services, then what should be the case with those who are well paid? This question you can answer for yourself to your own satisfaction. Plainly, one who aspires unto the position simply for the self-exaltation, especially when such an office holds out the spiritual responsibilities as does a church office, such a one should not be given any consideration whatsoever. And if he already has any station of responsibility, he should be relieved of it. For such high-minded leaders are spiritually blind, and they draw the multitudes unto themselves, as did the Lucifer draw the angel unto himself and the denomination. And his team. Let's read that last sentence again. And they draw the multitude to themselves, as did the Lucifer draw the angels to himself and unto their doom. Moreover, this class of the leaders did unto Yahshua and Allah unto themselves, as a rule, love the parade and even to exaggerate their religious deeds. Such should therefore be granted as a certain inspired disciple seeker, for this class of men are naturally clever. They manage to gain the confidence of the people by the same method with which the priests and the rabbis and the Assyrians deceived the nation. For they prayed where they could be seen, for they marred their faces to appear to be fasting, for they made it their business to err far and wide. Whatever good they did, they were adept at making themselves appear very religious, pious, philanthropic, and righteous. For the multitudes are still charmed by such so-called good men, and multitudes unquestionably accept their decision as if they were Yahweh's decision. Against such remember inspiration, one sees a man whose breath is in his nostrils. For wherein is he to be accounted of? Isaiah 2:23. Have these men worshipped to seen even more realistically, let me tell you something. For the thousands have advised us to recant if the president of the general conference sees no light in our teaching, if he sees no light in our revival and reformation among the Yahweh's people, for they seem to be just as sincere in this as were the Jews who confidently criticized against Yeshua by making the high priest's decision their own decision. Their wish for us to recant if the president sees no light shows that they are copying the Jews of the old, rather than looking into the matter themselves with the confidence in the spirit of the Yahweh, because it's showing them personally what the truth is, for they have absolute confidence in what a man, the president, tells them. Was not this very spirit in the hearts of the men that rejected and crucified the Yeshua? Obviously, this class of the person is not led by the truth, but by the men of the position. Such ones never ask, is it true? But by whom is it advocated? And if it does not come from the channel through which they would have it to come, then the truth is rejected. For they never stop to think that Yahweh is not taking orders from them, that they are not choosing the Yahweh's servant for him, and that the general conference president was elected by men, not because of his authority on the scriptures, but because of his ability for the commanding that the truth has never yet originated through him, that whatever Bible truth he himself has ever learned is only that which inspired men of Yahweh have taught him. For the laity, therefore, have never had greater need for the ceasing from men as they have this day. And if they do not reform, Yahweh have pity on them. It is to be remembered, though, that they are doing this foolish thing only because the ministry has so trained them only because some ministers are in league with the spirit that was in the core of Dathan and Abiram when they aspired unto the position of the prophets, although Yahweh has not delegated them as such. Then too, when a preacher begins a broadcasting his good deeds and accomplishments along with his religious experiences, also when a preacher rubs his eyes and blows his nose unnecessarily as he preaches and endeavors to make his audience start crying, when you see these things and a preacher, you know for certain that he is pulling the wool over the eyes of his listeners, that there is something up his sleeve. For I said, when you see a preacher doing these things, he is aiming to enlist your endorsement under something of his own. Beware. You may pursue the entire Bible, and I assure you that you will not find one of these things practiced by any of the prophets. They never aimed to make Yahweh's people sad, but always to rejoice in the Yahweh. Take, for example, Yahshua's his work, his mission, was greater and more important than any before him or after him. He had the religious experience that was worth telling, and if such a procedure would have been beneficial in the work of the salvation, he certainly would have taken advantage of it instead of preaching himself, though he preached the truth. He never tried to persuade anyone by the talking of himself, for he simply spake of the Bible truth and gave Yahweh, not himself, the credit. And if anyone can preach repentance and love, he could, but he never tried to play on the emotion of his audience, never tried to sit them crying over anything. No one, moreover, including ourselves, has ever accepted the writing of the prophets on the merits of their goodness, their education, or their personal religious experience. They wrote nothing concerning themselves and nothing to bolster their office. All who have accepted them have done so on the merits of their own writings. That is all. They never tried to win converts by what they themselves were or were not. Are they not to this day having success? And is it not the truth of the other that we must be after? We must be after. For the Jews asked for a sign, and the Greeks for the wisdom. But the Yahweh's people of today are asking for both sign and wisdom, rather than for the truth. Let us therefore never forget that the spirit of the self-exaltation originated all the evil which we see today, and which is harder at work than ever before. For we should not give The dragon had a chance to trap us and dump us into the dam with the third part of the angels, who took hold of his tail and could not let loose of it. Let us ever remember that the lofty looks of man shall be humble, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Yeshua alone shall be exalted in that day. Isaiah 2:11. This brings the end of our number 28 of the Town of Greetings, Volume 2. This is all of them. It looks like we have some time left. We got 35 minutes left on this hour. And the next study is a Two Timely Greetings number 29. And the name of this study is Truth a Decree on the Earth is a Decree in Heaven. Okay, let's look at that. Text for the... We'll forego the text for the prayer. Get right on into the study. This is a text of address by the Vichy Hall of February 28, 1948. Our text is in the 16th chapter of the Matthew. I shall begin with the verse number 13 and 14. Matthew 16, 13 and 14. When the Yeshua came into the coast of the Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, is, or am?" And they said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." Here Yahshua asked a lot of questions. "Who do men think I am?" For the answer given him reveals that people's ignorance, for it seems that they should have known that Yahshua could not have been John the Baptist, for they surely should have known that John had baptized him at the beginning of his ministry. Moreover, Yahshua was preaching even before John was beheaded. Matthew 16:15-16. "For he said unto them, To whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, Thou art Yahshua, the Son of the living Yahweh. For the disciples themselves seem to have been uncertain as to who Yahshua really was. For the Peter alone, without a moment's hesitation, replied, Thou art the Son of the living Yahweh. Matthew 16:17. And Yahshua answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in the heaven. For the Peter received the blessing because he was the one unto whom the Father revealed his Son, because he had been impressed by the Spirit of the sacred truth, and because he freely voiced the truth, having been endowed with this gift to his credit, Peter was told. And Matthew 16:18. And I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock. In other words, this is the doctrine of the truth that you just acknowledged of. I am the Son of the living Yahweh. I will build my church, and the gates of the hell shall not prevail against it. For the word thou and this comprehend two objects, Peter and the Jews that he uttered. For the name Peter in the Greek means stone, and so what the Yahshua is actually saying was not to name the man, but rather to tell him that he was selected to be one of the stones in the spiritual structure in the church, but on this rock, not on a stone, I will build my church. God said to his parents, on which rock? Obviously, on the solid rock of the church. The church that's the Peter uttered with the truth that Yahshua is the Son of the Yahweh, the Father. Then Yahshua made known that the gates of hell could not prevail against the truth, that the gates could not keep in hell any grave, even the dead in Yahshua, that they too are to be a part of the ever-living church, as a church that stands on the solid rock of the truth, Matthew 16:19. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of the heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on the earth shall be bound in the heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on the earth shall be loosed in the heaven. For Yahshua here declares that the Peter is become the figure as a type of all of those who declare the divinely revealed truth unto them, as to Peter are given the truth to the, that is, the promulgators of the inscribed truth are authorized for the binding and for the loosing by the power of the truth, that which they bind on the earth is so recognized in the heaven. For Elijah found that there should be a famine for the 3.5 years, and so it was. Said he unto Ahab, there shall not be dew nor rain of these years, but according unto my word, 1 Kings 17:1, Matthew 16:20. Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Yahshua, the Messiah, since the people knew not that Yahshua was the Son of the living Yahweh. For Yahshua realized that to flatly tell them so would only make them the more prejudiced. He therefore charged the apostles to be the same as which we today are charged to do, not to say flatly we have the truth, the message of the 11th hour. Indeed, we are to teach the divinely revealed Bible truth, thus giving our hearers the opportunity for the drawing of their own conclusion, for the making up of their own minds. If they are honest searchers for the truth, the Father himself will reveal in their hearts that this is the 11th hour message. It wasn't the 12th hour message, it's the 11th hour message. The 12th hour message comes in the 12th and last parabolic hour. The 11th hour message came in the 11th parabolic hour. And that manifestly means 2 hours before sundown. When you say a number 11, you say it's then it's 2 hours before sundown. We must not therefore bluntly speak forth the all-important truth of the other. We must use good judgment and tact. We must sow the seed in a well prepared soil if we expect Yahweh's blessing, if we expect his rain and sunshine to cause it to spring forth and bear fruit. If the seed is not sown deep enough, the plant will wither away with the rising of the sun. If we merely drop the seed on the top of the ground, the birds will pick it up. Matthew 16:21-23. From that time forth began Yahshua to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem, or unto Jerusalem, and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised again the third day. Then the Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be it not far from thee, Master, this shall not be unto thee." So he turned and said, "Get behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savest not the things that be of Yahweh, but those that be of men." Here is manna magnified, the aforesaid truth, Peter binding or loosing on the earth, was acceptable in the heaven, and only when done by the means of the divinely revealed truth. When he's speaking from his own impulses and sentiments, Peter was sharply rebuked and told plainly that his suggestions were not the truth, but were prompted by the Satan. It is therefore plain that the followers of the Yahshua may bind or loose only with the truth of the truth. They are to realize that the truth alone swings open the gates of the heaven. Finally, if we have heaven's truth for the hour as the Peter had it in his day, we then have the truth of the heaven and can with it bind or loose the truth, decisions on the earth are the decisions in heaven. Matthew 16:24. Then said Yahshua unto his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." For this verse implies that Peter's concern was more for his own life than for the life of Yahshua. For the Peter knew that if Yahshua was slain, then his own life would be in the jeopardy. Hence Peter was told that if any man would follow the Yahshua, he too would voluntarily consent to carry his own cross if the truth so decrees. For the apostles, we are told, did the very thing and were faithful unto death. Acts 16:25-26. "For whosoever shall save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life or for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for the soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according unto his works." For the followers of the Yahshua are here told not to shun truth, decrease, though they be required to surrender their own lives, for thus losing their lives, they will be actually saving them for the eternity. They will rise in the resurrection of the dead. But for them to forsake the truth in order for the appeasing of the enemies of the truth and thus save their temporal life will eventually result in their dying the death from which there is no resurrection. It should be of the interest to know whether the Apostle Peter was the first to be given the keys of the heaven, or whether others had the keys before him, since the present truth committed unto an individual is the keys of the heaven, and since the teaching of it binds and looses things on the earth and is so sanctioned in the heavens, then others must have had the keys before they were passed down to Peter. For the earth, the church, and heaven revealed the truth existed before Peter's time. Take, for example, Noah. He declared that there was to be a flood, that everything outside of the ark which he was building would perish, and that everything that entered into it would live. Then the fact that heaven sent the flood immediately after Noah, a priest of it, is proved in itself that that which Noah found on the earth was found in the heaven also. Peter, you see, was not the first to be given the keys of the heaven. After the Noah, we shall see that the keys were passed on unto Abraham, since that which was to be bound on or loosed on the earth had to be bound or loosed in the heaven. The three messengers from the heaven consulted Abraham's concerning the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. It was then covenanted that if there be 10 righteous persons in the city where Lot lived, they should not destroy it. And so it was. Logically, after Abraham, the tree should have been passed on to Isaac. Isaac ruled that the Jacob should receive the promised blessings, even though by the birthright they were to be Esau's. And in spite of the fact that Jacob obtained the promised blessings by his fraud, heaven still sanctioned that which Isaac abound on the earth. Jacob became the progenitor of the Asherah. Yes, it is. But down through the time of the line of Jacob came the Asherah. And that is that the Jacob's descendants inherited the promised land, having in their possession the keys of the kingdom of the heaven. Jacob, at the closing hours of his life, decreed that the Manasseh's birthright should be given unto Ephraim. To this, Joseph protested by the indifference for the persuading his father to put his right hand on the Manasseh head, Genesis 48:17-19. But what Jacob found on the earth was down in heaven. For years later, after the death of the Solomon, the tribe of Ephraim, not of the Manasseh, grew the kingdom of Israel, we see. Then, that what Jacob found on the earth is also found in the heaven. Contemporaneously with the Jacob Joseph by the interpretation of the Pharaoh's dream, found that there should be 7 years of the plenty and 7 years of the famine. Yes, it was, that Joseph's decree was carried out, bound by the heaven. And then Moses said, if these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited as the visitation of all men, then the Yahshua hath not sent me. For the Yahweh hath not sent me, but if the Yahweh makes a new thing, and the earth opens her mouth, and swallows them up with all that appertaineth to them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Yahweh, Numbers 16:29-30. For the Moses' decree was bound in the heaven, for the earth opened her mouth, and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. Numbers 16:32. For the keys of the kingdom, you see, passed along from one generation to another, from the patriarchs to the prophets and to the apostles, and on down unto our day. For instance, about 300 years ago, the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination declared that the general compass was no longer heaven's highest authority on earth. General Compass Bulletin 34, Session Volume 4, Extra Number 1, April 3, 1901. page 25, column 1 and 2. And thus it was that when the time arrived for the additional message, which gives power and force unto the third angel's message of the writing, as she said in 7, to be proclaimed unto the church, it came not through the general compass, but through the laity. This is proof, causes, that the keys with which the Peter was invested are at work today. Plainly then, the keys of the kingdom of the heaven are in the hands of those who have the truth for the day. Consequently, just as plain as heaven can make it, the truth stands out that the keys of the kingdom of the heaven today have passed from the hands of the general compass to the hands of the general association of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists. And I'll say now, since the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists have right through closed out the Adventist movement in 2002 in Turner with Brother Johnson as the head, then he had the keys and he had to pass them on to the next succession, and that was Mount Zion, the 12th hour, the house of David, and the judgment of the living. Our passion from the judgment of the dead to the judgment of the living, and the keys came to Elijah David. And that was a subject that came up down at Kermit when we were separating down there. Alan DeLong went with me. He wrote a letter to Brother Teddy Johnson. It took him 3 days to work it out. And he said, give those keys that you have to this, the kingdom. Pass them on to Denton Brunken as a lawful heir. And he refused to do it. And so I prophesied and I said to him, you lose everything you got. And sure enough, he ended up being carted off to the sanatorium. In other words, he died in a nursing home. Sanhedrin to Peter and the days of Yahshua's first advent. So it is that the truth decrees here on earth today is a big key in heaven. This brings the end of number 29. And we have still 12 minutes left on this hour, and so our next study is in 2 Tommy Green's number 30. And it's called Revival and Reformation, crowned with the purification. Text of address by the Vita Hall of March 6, 1948. Okay, text of address March 6, 1948. This is for the text for our subject. This afternoon is Malachi's prophecy. For it treats of a revival and a reformation such as the world has never yet known. Moreover, the fact that the prophecy is written in such a way as partially for the applying unto the ancient Israel, and yet specifically for the people in the latter days, for those who are approaching the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, prove that the Reformation needed and the Malachi's day is needed also in our day. There is nothing so mysterious in the writings of the Malachi than what any Bible student can comprehend by the studying of the book itself. I shall therefore study with you the last two chapters. For the first two, you can study at leisure. We shall begin with Malachi 3, 1 and 2. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, whom ye seek, shall suddenly come to this temple. Even the messenger of the covenant, that's the answer for Elijah, whom ye delight in, because behold, he shall come, saith Yahshua the host, for who may abide the day of his coming and who shall stand when he appears, for he is like a refined star and like a fuller's coat. For the first two persons are here disposed to view the messenger and the usher. For the messenger is to precede the coming of the usher. He is to prepare the way, then the usher is to appear. And who could this messenger be? Only the one whom the Yahshua named. For he declared, "Behold, I will send you the Elijah, as the prophet before the coming of the, or as the prophet Elijah before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, not a God or that. For this messenger of the covenant of the prophet, and typically Elijah, the prophet shall prepare the way, and he shall restore all things. As he prepares the way, for the Yahshua will suddenly come to his temple and to his church. And what is his work to be? To purify or cleanse his people by the weeding of the unrepentant sinners from among them. For the question that who may abide the day of his coming solemnly declares that we had better now get busy and do what it takes to make us stand before the cleansing begin. Whom in the particular will he purify? Let us read Malachi 3:3. And he shall sit and refine and purify the silver, and shall purify the sons of the Levi, that's the priesthood, that would be the 144,000, and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahshua, or Yahweh the Father, an offering in righteousness. For the Levites, you know, comprised of the tribe from which came the priesthood, for the ministers of the Yahweh, and since this prophecy is to meet its complete fulfillment in our day, the figure is true for the Levites, as the ministers of the Yahweh in our day are to be purified. What then? Malachi 3:4. Then shall the offering of the Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Yahweh, as in the days of old, and as in the former years. For this verse implies that the offering which we now bring unto the Yahweh are not pleasing unto him, not pleasing as in the times past. Here we have the glorious promise that not long hence there shall be a pure ministry, a pure people, a people without the God in their mouths, without the spot or wrinkle or any such thing, Ephesians 5:27. Those who do not measure unto this standard will not stand thereafter. No sinner will stand in their midst. For henceforth, says the Yahshua, there shall be no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean, Isaiah 52:1. For this glorious future is, moreover, reiterated by the spirit of prophecy in our day. Here it is. Only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted for the action of a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message when it shall have swelled into the loud cry. Review in Hell, November 18, 1908. We have been in kind for the thinking that where there are no faithful ministers, there can be no true believers. But this is not the case, for the Yahweh has promised that where the shepherds are not true, he will take charge of the flock himself. For the Yahweh has never made the flock wholly dependent upon the human instrumentalities. that the day of the purification of the church will hasten on apace, for the Yahweh will have a people pure and true, and the mighty sifting soon to take place. We shall be better able for the measure of the strength of Israel, for the signs reveal that the time is near when the Yahshua will manifest that his fan is in his own hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor, for the days are fast approaching, when there will be great perplexities and confusion. Satan clothed in the angel's robe will deceive, if possible, the very elect. There will be God's many and Lord's many. Every wind of the doctrine will be blowing. Those who have rendered supreme homage unto science, falsely so-called, will not be the leaders in. Those who have trusted in the intellect, genius, or talent will not then stand at the head of the rank and power, for they did not keep pace with the light. For those who have proved themselves unfaithful will not then be entrusted with the flock in the last solemn work. A few great men will be engaged. They are self-sufficient, independent of Yahweh, and he cannot use them. For yes, Yahweh has a faithful servant who in the shaking testing time will be disclosed to you. There are the precious ones now hidden, who have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not had the light that has been shining and concentrated the blaze upon you. Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80. In the sifting, shaking time, Testimonies, Volume 5, 80, we shall be able, or better able, for the knowing how many are really serving the Yahweh. Those whom we may think are to lead the church into the kingdom may be missing, while others entirely unknown to us take their places. Moreover, it will be found that those who are constantly drilling into the minds of the laity that there are to be no more messengers sent from the Yahweh, no more truth needed, and that someone is constantly trying to deceive them, that they should keep aloof from everything that does not meet the minister's approval. Those who do this are the very ones who have already unwittingly deceived the laity and are doing their best to keep them deceived. This fact, you see, stands up high like a beacon on a hill. For the only thing that their carefulness not to be deceived will accomplish, unless they awake, is for the keeping themselves deceived forever and away from this present unfolding of the truth. For these shall not be able for the standing when the Yahweh Yahshua appears in his temple. That's Yahshua, the son of Yahweh. Hence the revival and reformation brought to you in the Malachi is the first and the last of his kind, and it indeed to be crowned with the purification of the church. Those who do not awake now will therefore sleep forever. Oh. For the laity sin deception from within should not be news unto you, for you well know that the church has never, that the Seventh-day Adventist Church has never in any, or the truth, the Church of Israel has never in any age been deceived by any but by its own ministry, by those who have been as highly esteemed as were the members of the Sanhedrin, those who crucified the Yeshua, those who kept the nation. He saved until it was too late to recover, thus it was in before them, and thus it has been ever since, and so it is now. Stop and think, it's true. No, I am not telling you something new. You know this to be so, but you never think of it, and that is the main trouble with the entire Seventh-day Adventist denomination. For the Seventh-day Adventist Church purified shall nevertheless triumph. Let's say it again. For the spiritual Israel, the congregation of the day, purified, that would be the starting with 144,000, shall nevertheless triumph. And that would be the house of David succeeding the Seventh-day Adventist Church and march on to victory. So is the ministry of the Son and terrible is among his banners. She is to go forth conquering and to conquer. Okay. Prophets and James, page 725. Let us once and forever realize that the devil is more shrewd than we can imagine, for he is not particular, but you believe so long as they can keep you ignorant of the revealed truth. This is what he is now dealing with in the church, using men of the influence, men who can put on the best front, men who are clever and who know how to gain the confidence of the people, men who can easily and quietly lead the church away from Yahweh's message, from the Yahweh's message for today, for the message of the judges for the living. And I will tell you, Richie Hollis really didn't have the judges for the living. He still had the last part of the judges for the dead, for the Seventh-day Adventist and Ellen G. White. But he said, just for the purification of the church, for the cleansing of the sanctuary, Satan is doing as good a job as he did in Yahshua's time. It's not the knowledge of the Malachi's prophecy, the purification of the Seventh-day Adventist church, the judges for the living. And that's the judgment for the living in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And then the purified ones come forth then to take the message to the Gentile world and continue on with the as the harvesters in the time of the judgment of the living. More important, I believe, the church than the judgment for the dead. Does it look to you as though you are being deceived by this Bible study, or does it look to you as though you need to reform? Here, therefore, what the Yeshua is about to do, Malachi 3:5, and I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness unto you against the sorcerers, and against the adulterers, and against the false spirits, and against those that oppress the hireling and his wages, the widow, and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his life, and fear not me, saith Yahshua of those. These are only some of the sins in the Adventist Church in which men are indulging. Speaking of the message bearers of today and of the church condition, inspiration further says, for they lament and afflict their souls because pride, avarice, selfishness, and deception of almost every kind are in the church. For the spirit of the Yahweh that prompts for the reproof and is trampled under the foot. Okay. while the servants of the Satan triumph, Yahweh is dishonored, where the present truth made of none effect. Testimony, volume 5, page 210 and 211. You will receive the mark of the deliverance only if you sigh and cry against all these abominations, Ezekiel 9:46. For this list of the sins of Yahshua calls attention unto the following and asks us to repent. That's in Malachi 3:6-9. This being the end of this, this is our contact at the 11th hour, calling number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.